danger, and it has the great negative effect on social participation. And the other thing is that this use of the internet still is as only used in the Western hemisphere of some part of the world, in hard industrial countries, and certain people who can afford to have that. And we see the rest of the world, they can't even afford the basic, you know, having a telephone line or something like that. Then it's something that we cannot hardly rely on that when we want to use that as a communication purpose for developing the social movement. But that's something we have to bear in mind, that not the rest of the world, or two-thirds of the world, don't have that facility. That's all.
Just make a quick statistic. 80% of the world's population has never made a phone call.
Well, just a couple of things. Like the two people who've spoken already, I found this a very interesting and a very useful talk. And what it seems to me to be is a coming of age in a way, because I can remember, probably a while ago now, 6, 7, 8 years ago, when this term internet, this term email, when I first heard them, in the party, I don't think anybody really knew, certainly I didn't really know what these things meant. But a discussion was started there. And that discussion's progressed as we've come to know more and more about it. There was a very optimistic strain, I think, in for party members when these terms were first used, which of course meant that we didn't know what the hell we were talking about, but this was going to be the solution to all of our problems, and wasn't it going to be nice? And of course the discussion's moved on, but what we've seen today, in my opinion, it's the first time the party has had any sort of mature approach to what this technology is and what it can be for us. So I think that's an area of the party's thought which has come of age this afternoon. The thing really I want to say, it's just a very brief example, for what it's worth, but Paddy was talking about the power of this thing to allow us to see behind what governments sometimes choose to tell us. And what I think is a good example of that recently, which is to do with what's been happening in Kosovo. Because, of course, in Kosovo, what did they tell us? Well, they're implementing this plan that was agreed at a place just outside Paris called Rambouillet. This Rambouillet peace plan, and it was because the Serbs wouldn't go along with this that they bombed the shit out of them for several weeks. Well, this Rambouillet peace plan was not published in its entirety in this country. It wasn't published in the traditional sense of the word. There were large chunks of it which weren't published in the traditional sense in this country. Now, of course, that doesn't really mean anything anymore, because this thing was published in other countries and it was published on the internet. And so a good friend of mine downloaded for me the complete document. It was published in a paper which is a diplomatic paper from Belgium called Le Monde Diplomatique, although it's actually an English language document. And he downloaded it for me and gave it to me. And there were some quite interesting things in there. Some very interesting things if we're interested in the causes of what's been happening there. But this was something we wouldn't have got access to through most of the mainstream media. We certainly couldn't have gone into Waterstones or Smith and bought it for ourselves. We could have gone across to Brussels or France and got it there maybe. But this was a concrete example of how we can use this thing to dodge all of the things that they put in our way, to give us a much better understanding than they probably would like us to have.
I just wanted to mention one thing, Masoud was saying, and you were also, just to draw attention to the fact that in the Chiapas region of Mexico, the Zapatistas live in the jungle, the guerrilla fighters live in the jungle, and they actually are able to contact the outside world continuously because they are on internet. I just want to mention that because, in fact, this is people in the so-called third world who actually have control, have command of the internet, and can actually put forward their policies and combat the attempt to discourage people from supporting it. And therefore, it has strengthened their cause.
Well, I should say that I was a good talk, as the fact I actually understood some of it. Speaking of somebody whose technical know-how only goes as far as being able to program his video, I think he made it very clear to me, and probably for the first time. But while I was pondering the wisdom of something that he just said, he said something else that I didn't quite catch it. Did I hear him say that with government becoming more and more irrelevant as the corporations take over? What did he mean by that?
Do you want me to answer? That's a fair point. It's a bit of a throwaway remark. It's a whole debate by itself, actually, and you're right to pick me up on that. Obviously, corporations now becoming multinational and mobile in a way that governments aren't is creating a tension between multinationals and governments. Quite obviously, if Microsoft decides to move its centre of operations from Virginia to Thailand, it's going to have a huge impact on the US economy. Clearly, Washington is going to make quite sure that it stays on good terms with Bill Gates. But as I say, it was a bit of a throwaway remark, but I did put it in somewhat accidentally, because a lot of internet commentators are talking about the rise of the corporate new form of mercantile capitalism, which is almost like the thing that the libertarian capitalists are saying, that we can actually do away with the government. They're becoming increasingly irrelevant, and that we only have to see the armed forces and the judiciary taken over by corporations to render states as defunct as the steam engine. As I say, it is a whole debate by itself, but the internet is making it, if anything, more easy for corporations to do this. Than they can move a lot faster than governments in some cases, but it's not a statement I would particularly be willing to stand or fall by.
Yes.
I'll hear very well.
For years, especially after the Second World War, places like Russia, they were impenetrable. There was no way you could ever get through to the ordinary Russian population with their stuff. There were radio broadcasts going on, which could be quite easily jammed. So in places like Russia, with totalitarian regimes, they were able to seal off their own populations from any kind of contact or discussion with anyone. I recently read a piece about the situation in China. I'm sure you've seen it before. Well, one huge problem is the Chinese government, who would deal without this situation with their own population, to seal off. Mainly in America, and people using the internet in China are sending out to these groups all sorts of information from inside China. And these are being used in America, but also with the traffic going the other way. Tanks, propaganda tanks, and interests sort of thing, send the other way and download it and keep distributing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just fill you in on the picture. A Chinese internet user who distributed 30,000 email addresses to a Democracy magazine published in the United States has been jailed for crimes against the state. This is from The Guardian, Thursday, January 21st. He was Lin Hai, a 30-year-old owner of a software company in Shanghai, was found guilty of subversion. He'd been in jail for 2 years. The article then says, Beijing is trying to draw a clear line between approved use of the internet, which is seen as an essential part of the technological revolution, and its use for improper purposes. These include gambling, pornography, selling goods, and the spreading of subversive political ideas. China has confirmed plans for monitoring units to supervise internet use. The number of web users in China is now 2.1 million compared to 670,000 in 1997. One comment I'd add to that is that China can confirm all it likes, plans to monitor, introducing monitoring units, just like record companies for years and years were going to use all sorts of clever devices to stop us pirating all their records and CDs. They've never been able to do it, and the reason is because the pirates are always one step ahead. As fast as they develop one means of censoring us, somebody else will develop a means to get around it.
Yes, one of the things that's the development of the internet has drawn more attention to, it, a different part of it, is this conflict between different aspects of capitalism, that is to say, the needs of capital in the marketplace and the needs of capitalists in controlling the class, their class dominance. And the clashes are becoming extremely obvious more recently. One of the areas in which this is happening is the one that Paddy's just mentioned, that's in the marketing of music. With the use of this software program known as MP3, the contents of a CD can be compressed into a couple of minutes of telephone time and simply sent to somebody else. You can therefore send many millions of copies of a CD record out, and how are they going to make their money on this? It's not only them, of course, it's the publishers who make the music as well. But this is so powerful a tool that they already want to fight for it and are therefore trying to find other ways of making money out of it. But the thing that's happening here is that this is of itself subverting governments. It's this commercial freedom, which is so important to profitability of capital and the general marketplace, that governments and government policies are being subverted all the time into what capital regards as freedom. And this maybe is one of the reasons why they keep on confusing the terms of free market and democracy. There is a perverted sense in which they have something in common, but it's their freedom for capital. The fact is that once it's granted to one particular agency, it's very difficult to prevent anybody using it. And this is to be what's happening on the internet.
No, it's just a small point. As a non-internet person, someone who's only just been given a computer for the first time, and that to do by writing on. You talked about people being isolated in these rooms, and then Peter mentioned how you penetrate Russia and other parts of the world, jungles. There's a little social problem that I encountered in my flat when I had two internet fanatics living with me. For instance, I never talked to them. I was glad when they used the bloody telephone. And it was worse than this. I love cooking. And they'd say, well, can I borrow your saucepan? And I'd say, yes. They'd put it on, and their idea of cooking was to put something in a saucepan, or two or three of my best saucepans, and go off and play on the internet, and eventually come back when they smelt burning. I felt very isolated in that situation.
I can't remember, I'll find it, but a report showed that you've got basically two types of internet users. You've got the early adopters, as they're called, who are the sort of stereotypical nerds who spend all their time on the machine, never talk to anybody, never wash, and always burn their meals. And then you've got the rest of us who are more cautious. We'll wait and see how it turns out, and then when it looks pretty safe and everybody else is starting to use it, then we'll go. And I think that's the right way to be, personally. I think let them make the mistakes, let them fall down the holes in the road, you know. When they've pioneered the path, all the rest of us will follow. But, you know, I think we were moving away from this stereotype of the nerdy computer geeks, you know, yeah, they were the early adopters, but they're not the majority or the mainstream, you know, so I think, yeah, we'll forget about them, really.
I made the point about, if you got your encyclopedias, who read the books, you know, it was a status symbol, and I always get a wee feeling myself that having your computer and getting into the internet is about your status symbol. I know it's the younger people who are enthusiastic than I am. My son's quite enthusiastic about getting to see a wee computer and going on the internet and that. So I don't know if there's a generation gap with that. But there is definitely a big drive to get us onto it. And Murdoch, he's getting away his boxes, Nord Digital's getting away boxes. And the cable companies are going to be coming in towards the end of the year. And they always did give away their box, but apparently their box is going to be a better box, and they're going to be able to see emails and onto the internet and all the rest of it if you go digital. So I don't think there's a tremendous enthusiasm for digital. They're obviously hoping, they've got all this stuff set up, and they're hoping to get you into it. And they're setting up all this internet with all this stuff to read, and they're going to have to try and get us to read it. And I think Paddy's right there. They're going to have to deal happy, getting his boxes, getting his free calls and things like that. And that's it, my son. Why are you so enthusiastic about all this? Anyway, the adverts and that, and 73, the advert you see is that the adverts that you watch while you're looking through all this, that pays for this. They get their money this way, and they have some deal with the telephone company as well. So, but are they going to be reading the book, you know? Are they going to be reading the internet? I don't know if that's a particularly great thing. It's certainly going to be forced on us. The other people I spoke to are interested in the internet, but that's because they can get the plans for the wee box. This is for Ron's point about sabotaging the system. And get the wee box, they can fit it into the back of their box and get everything free. They can get all the films that you've got to pay for in the front row and the X channels and all the rest of it. And so you just pay for the minimum sort of package. You pay this £70 or £80, and you put the e-books at the back, and you get everything free in that sense.
I'll buy one.
Well, there's a lot of photo of them, and you kind of get down the room by other than. But this seems to be more the what I've sort of seen, where a lot of enthusiasm is coming from. And that's it about a block. They're going to be changing all these boxes around and putting in digital boxes. Can you not get these something with these boxes? He says, I don't know about that. I said, I'll need to look it up on the internet. He says, because you get all the plans on that. About how to fix all the wires and maybe you can use these old boxes and still get the business. So in this sense, I've seen a lot of folk quite enthusiastic, but it's usually for a thing that they're trying to stop, you know, the two-loop warmers, all these things will go on fire, that kind of thing. So for this area, but I think there's going to be a lot of potential there, but as I say, are the folk going to be reading it? Are they going to be reading anywhere in the read the social standard? Are they going to go out their way to find out?
Can I come back? I'm sure I saw in one of the conferences for ADM agendas within the last few years there an item for discussion which said, can we get socialism on the internet? Now, I don't know if that item was ever reached.
No, I don't think it was.
Right. Can you, whoever was responsible for it, if they're here, can you let us know?
Guilty. Guilty of it, not responsible.
Okay, I'll buy that. Right. Whoever was guilty of it, and can you explain to, you know, a dodo like me, you know, what they meant by that?
Yes, guilty. I asked the branch to put it forward. And it was in the form of a question. Could the socialist revolution be accomplished on the internet, was what was the thing. And it has to do with the question, or the idea behind the question, has to do with the problems of getting democratic action on the part of millions of people. And reasonably enough, simultaneous action, not something which spreads over periods of years and trickles through as people travel. The whole point about the internet is the speed of communication and, in fact, the numbers with whom you can communicate at any one time. That may, as we've seen, develop down towards smaller units. But at the moment, you can send messages out to thousands of people, if not millions of people, at once. You can certainly communicate to the other side of the world in something like 2 minutes flat, you know. Now, this is a way in which, therefore, not only information can spread, but also decision-making can spread. You can have a referendum. If you put out a question, do we think there's enough popular support for doing away with capitalism? You get your response. You'll probably, we hope, certainly get a no response. And you might try that every 5 years. As long as you keep getting a no response, you know exactly where you are and how to go on. So that was the idea behind it. It is the mass and the speed of communication, which is to say, it isn't democracy in itself, it's just an aid to democracy.
How do you know who's filling these things in, Paddy? Is there a way? I mean, what's to stop me saying, writing to you and pretending I'm wrong?
Well, nothing.
Well,
I mean,
that's the trouble with a vote, isn't it? I mean, what's to stop me voting a million times?
Well, Dan raised the fact that we've got 700 hits a week on the website, but what he doesn't know is actually it's been me. I've been ringing in 700 times a week just to cheer him up.
So you're a nerd, then, are you?
I'm guilty. Sorry, Dan, I was going to keep that from you.
You can check most of the time. You can check most of these things. You've only got to ring back. It's like when somebody phones you and pretends to be something.
That,
you simply ring back the number you know.
But there is
if you're talking about the people at India voting in favour or against something, the whole of India, you can't even ring them up back.
There's so many people involved
in it. But to get world socialism, you know, you'd have to have, well, the world population, wouldn't you? Problems, isn't there?
There is something called, Dan might be able to tell you more than me, called a digital signature, which you can get, which is supposed to be like an electronic thumbprint, so that whoever receives your email knows that it was from you and not from somebody else. The problem with that, though, if you examine the implications of that, of course, is that if you identify yourself with some sort of ID card on the net, you create the possibility of surveillance by the state. You make it far easier for them to watch you. So that has to be a bit of a problem. If we make effective use of democracy on the net, we're also opening ourselves for all kinds of problems from the powers that be. So it's a bit of a double-edged thing. Well, yeah, possibly. And I don't think we have anything particularly to fear from being monitored.
If your response got on, you heard the Paddy say that 80% of the world's population never even made a phone call, and it follows then that there must be even more who don't have a phone. So, by the way, I don't accept those figures, I just cannot see how that can possibly be right in this day and age. But you know, if that is somewhere near the truth, then what must be the percentage of people's minds who are on the internet? That must be incredibly tiny. And you know, I don't agree either with Paddy's view that the time is not far distant, that everybody's going to be the internet, and if they're TV, that'll probably take its place. I just cannot see that happening. And if it does happen,
well, just one thing about that, you don't need to use a telephone to access the internet, and one thing that's being talked about now is data broadcasting, just the way you broadcast for a TV signals. Because it's recognised that most people who use the net tend to go to the same places and want the same information. For example, if you want the news, you know, why ring in, especially to get the news? Why not just have it broadcast via the TV aerials? So for a large amount of the information that people will predictably want on a daily basis, you could broadcast that. So that will clear up the channels, that will make the rest of the web surfing much faster, because it's not clogged up with people all going and asking the same question all the time. TV top boxes to convert your TV into a terminal, remote control instead of a keyboard. You know, these things are, the technology's old, in fact, you know, none of this is cutting edge technology anymore. So, but as you say, it's recognised. It's obviously a Western world phenomenon at the moment. It's its impact in the third world is, you know, well, they've got more to worry about than whether they've got internet access, unfortunately. But obviously that's the case. It's obviously going to be here first, you know, and but it will expand, I think, in the next 20 years. I wouldn't care to guess how long it will take for everyone in the world to be online, but, you know, obviously you have to start somewhere. Fairly easily with mobile phones, you can climb up mountains, take your laptop or your mobile phone and send emails directly to the World Wide Web from the top of Everest. It's been done. People have explored the Amazon and sent back internet hourly reports. So
these dodos still exist. They go into isolation in order to escape the isolation.
Well, the online world will come and visit you and examine you from an anthropological point of view.
Online doesn't necessarily mean, though, that every... I don't know why we keep talking about Hottentot, by the way. I don't even know what a Hottentot is. But it doesn't necessarily mean that every single Hottentot's going to have a computer. I don't know what Hottentots live in either, but wherever they live. They're going to have a computer sitting upstairs if they have to. Think back to when the internet first started to become widespread in this country. You don't see them so much anymore, but there were these things called internet cafes, cyber cafes, yeah, where you could go, and you can still do it in libraries. You don't need the computer there in your home. The library that I go to is, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles from where I live. But I could, if I wanted, go there every week. Book a time on the computer, I'd have my own little email address and I could read my emails there. And yet that's something, a computer that would be shared by thousands of other people, quite possibly. And if you go to India, somewhere that I know a little, so let's use that as an example, if you go to the Indian villages, well, you certainly won't go into every home in the village and see a television sitting there, but you can bet your bottom dollar that there'll be at least one television in the village. You go into any district in the Indian slums, you can see the television aerial sprouting. And it's like this thing that happened long before I was born, I'm glad to say, but which some of these dodos talking about, and that because Victor used it previously, which was the coronation in 1953. This was before the days of widespread television ownership, but it was at the stage then where quite possibly a person in the street might have one if it was in a better off area. A lot of people had access to it. And you'd have all these people crowding in, sitting in somebody else's front room, knocking things off the mantelpiece and watching these foul parasites doing what they do best. If you've got this facility in one place in the village or in one place in the community, you are in a sense online if you want to. I don't think anybody is suggesting that you're going to be strong-armed into going and joining in the fun, but you would have the access. It's quite easy to foresee a time when the majority of the world's population will have access. Look at the viewing figures for the World Cup. They talk about 1 billion, 2 billion people. That's quite a lot of people. That's half the world's population is supposed to see. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But it's not difficult to foresee a time when that number of people will have access to the internet, particularly with what Paddy's talking about, where you no longer need the telephone line. In a way, I think the telephone thing is a bit of a red herring. Much more useful measure, I think, is the number of people who have access to television. And that's much higher. People in some of these communities, they don't need television. They don't need telephones. There's no reason why they should want access to telephones. But they do want access to television, and if they want it, they're sure as hell they've got it.
Just to finish, I'll try to be brief. Between April and June this year, the ownership of mobile phones in this country went up from 2 million between April and June. Now, mobile phones are a particular type of technology that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the internet, but companies like Nokia make one, which is
equivalent to a small computer with internet connections. In other words, you can carry it about in your pocket. It's a bit heavy, a bit big, but you can communicate with the internet, you can put stuff on the screen, you can type with a miniature keyboard. In other words, we must stop thinking about the computer as being something that necessarily is a laptop, a PC. It is now, for those people who want it, very much like a mobile phone. And if they are taking off at that rate, it implies that there is the same type of demand, probably even greater than there was for television when it first came out. That's to say, it is going to spread like wildfire. The prices of these things are falling because the market wants people to be online. It wants people to be available and use their communications and get advertising and all the rest of it. So that's going to drive it.
Yes, in fact, I mean, some mobile phones do email now, don't they? That's an option you can have. I think at the moment you have to pay a bit extra for that, but that's certainly no problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of dealing with the same, except I'm still in the same position as when I first watched television. In those days, it's true. We all used to crowd around them. In fact, there was one in the Science Museum. It was so rare. And there was a big computer in the Science Museum that played NIM and always beat you because it cheated. And I was ace at NIM, and it always made the only unbeatable move first, and it never let you go first. And then there was this television in another room, all of its own, this television. And I used to go in there, and I was supposed to stand back in awe at the scientific market. I used to go and just watch from 3:30 at Newmarket. And now the television's in my house, I use it for exactly the same purpose. So nothing changes really, does it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the talk, Paddy. But with this, if we want to achieve a socialist revolution, then one of the essential things we can't think about is communication. Now, capitalist society has developed the internet, a means of communication. Now, it ain't going to produce something absolutely perfect, tailor-made for us, straight off. But we've got to have a good look at it, acknowledge its advantages and its disadvantages, and utilise the best way we can in a positive, creative way. I mean, it ain't going to lay it on a plate for us, but I mean, as it's producing the tools to dig its own grave, we have to adapt them and use them the best way we can. And I think the internet, I still do, I mean, I've not been discouraged at all by anything I've heard at all about the internet. I still think it's going to be one of the things that will accelerate the movement towards a socialist revolution.
Can I ask a serious question? You know, the governments can never get control of this. It's always something, all the reading I've done of the behaviour of governments always niggles at me when I hear that said. I was just reading last week again, 1984, where the television set not only beamed out the pictures but watched you at the same time. And, you know, with the, you yourself mentioned how rapid the advance in technology was. Whilst it's true at the moment, that does seem unlikely. With the government, there's tremendous government resources put into these things. You know, it began as a government military thing, they're desperate, quite right, using paedophilia, pornography, anything they can to try and get control. But I don't, in spite of what you say, can you reassure me as why I should be confident that they're not going to get control of that thing and in a way which is not where I'm from.
Well, briefly, because I think that they'll be defeated by technology. It goes back to the argument about that I mentioned in connection with the music business, and obviously it was always in the interest of record companies to restrict sales, to restrict access to the music. You know, the way you make money out of music is by restricting access to it, not opening access to it. But they've never been able to do it. No matter what they've come up with, it's been defeated. So one idea was to incorporate a sort of electronic bleep into CD so that when you recorded them, you got this horrible bleep that went across the tracks. That idea was dropped because Sony or one of these companies then promptly, within days, produced a CD player that electronically cut the bleep out. Because their reasoning is, well, who's going to buy a CD player that plays the bleep? Obviously, no one will. Everyone will buy the new one. So, to the extent that the state will try and control the internet and will try and censor the internet, I think that capitalism will defeat them. That would be my assurance. Obviously, we can't say for certain. Obviously, it's a war that's never going to stop being fought, I would say. Well, while we have capitalism.
Do you know if they can actually find out what sites you're going to? You know, if you've got a credit card, they say that you could tell what you eat, where you end your holidays, what you have to drink. Still a hell of a lot.
Yeah, they can.
Could they find out, for instance, if I was always looking at the Social Standard page or the Revolver page or something like that, if they came and confiscated, is there any way that they could say this man made 700 hits in Health and Efficiency or something like this magazine?
Well, again, yes, they could, but if you were sufficiently concerned about it, you could block every attempt. There are things called cookies. When you access a site, it sends a tiny little file down the phone and sticks it in your computer somewhere. It's totally harmless. It's called a cookie. It's an identifier. That's all it is. So the next time you hit that site, they look for their cookie, and if it's there, they'll say, "Oh, you've been to see us before. We know who you are." So it's an identifier. Now, you don't have to accept these cookies. You can turn them off. If you get thousands and thousands of them, they start to build up and take up space. So you can just delete them all. I frequently do. You know, I get loads of them, so I just get rid of them. So it doesn't really matter. You've got history files on your own machine that you can, if you want, you can delete them.
I mean, could you find out what sites you had visited in the last week or something?
Using my own history files,
yes,
I could.
Yeah.
I could remind myself.
So
these things.
Probably if the police raided your place.
Yeah.
It's been very dramatic, you know, took you away screaming and that, and you get a machine, this guy's been reading the retrievers and how to train them or something. Perversive thing like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I think Gary Glitter got done, didn't he? Because
yeah.
They found child pornography supposedly on his computer. So, I mean, this issue of security, you can't make phony assurances and say, no, they can never track you. As I mentioned earlier, with digital signatures, in order to make democracy online a practical possibility, you are going to put your thumbprint on your internet transactions. You are going to be traceable. You are going to be, you know, just because you need to be able to say who you really are. For trading as well, what people think is going to happen, probably is going to happen, is that rather than using credit cards, I mean, who wants to give their credit card phone number their credit card number over the internet? For God's sake, that's not going to happen. No, you know, nobody's that trusting. On the other hand, what you can do is you can just say, well, whatever I buy on the internet, let them charge me through my phone bill. So the way that probably we'll pay for goods and services on the internet is through your phone bill. And all that has to happen then is for you to actually be able to demonstrate in the transaction that you really are who you say you are and that you operate from this phone number so that you can be billed. So in order for capitalism to work, I think that you are going to have to be identifiable, which therefore means that you are trackable. And some people are scared by the notion that that you can be tracked through your transactions. There was a wonderful mad reverend preacher prophesying on the Channel 4 Nostradamus night last week. He was great. Terry L. Cook, he was called. And he was prophesying that the state will be able to monitor us the entire time through our transactions on the internet. And also, not only that, but even worse than that, and something I had thought myself a few years ago, was that instead of having all these credit cards, you'll just have one credit card. But he took it one stage further than I had, which is that he says that you can be an implant. It's just an implant that you put under your skin so that for all time you are identifiable to the in terms of transactions, but also to the state. So it was a bit of a nightmare story there. So he was saying, you know, they'll watch us all the time, 24 hours a day. Every time we go to the toilet, they'll know about it. Every time we go and buy a paper, they'll know about it. Every time we make a phone call, they'll know who we've talked to and what about. So, you know, it can be scary.
Can we find out who these 700 hits? I know all MI5, aren't they?
Can we find out
who the 700 hits are? You know the countries, you know?
Yeah.
But Dick, I remember when I was...
Through the chair.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, just to answer the question, yes, some of the... I knew where who were the visitors, university department from America, military, U.S. military... I don't know what they wanted. You could tell some of them.
No.
Yes, well, with regard to this question of being identified, that's still just about within the realms of possibility in any democratic situation. But it's all comes down to a question of numbers. And particularly if, say, a vote is taken at 8 o'clock in the morning Greenwich Mean Time by everybody who's on the website and interested. No possibility of traffic there might be a few pinchers, but the amount of traffic is so huge that this is what makes it an impossibility. And in fact, I think, although the Meredith Hill stations must still be sending all this information to America about every phone call and every fax, every email, it seems to me that the traffic is simply going to overwhelm them, that it is rising so fast that when they say they are watching, who the hell is watching? I know there's computers sifting this stuff, but some individual at some time is going to make a decision. Well, I mean, it's a question of what's the volume they can deal with, and it seems to me that they just can't.
I mean, I don't know if anybody saw a couple of years ago a really interesting dispatches program about Menwith Hill. This top security establishment, all the golf balls on the hill with the radar inside, monitoring all intercontinental traffic coming out of this country, using keywords, key searches for, you know, so if you phone someone up, say, "Hello, Ron, bomb, assassinate, president, queen, murder," etc., Menwith Hill will go, "I've got to listen to this." And this top security establishment run by the National Security Agency and the CIA was so impenetrable that six local housewives walked through the main gate unopposed, walked into the offices and took down a dozen security and confidential sheets, took them, walked out of the base and took them to the local press and said, "Here, I'll publish these are secrets." Red faces all round after that.
Can I ask you, is there any possibility of sending more messages from the internet ministers?
I'd say no. Because the same thing applies to internet as to TV. You could do it, I suppose, but...
I'm not saying legally, but...
You've got me. I don't think so. The problem with a TV, you can flash an image and it's gone. Yeah. With the internet, you have to download a page and it stays there. So you'd have to download a page, it flash up and then self-destruct. So in theory, a file would have to open itself and close itself very, very quickly. I'm not sure. You've got me. That's an interesting one.
It's just crossed my mind that when you're just switching on and the screen's doing my way, you know.
Well, actually, it's interesting that you say that because, I mean, nobody's actually mentioned viruses, which, yeah, of all the things that you might be afraid of, is probably the most fearsome, the thing that realistically, you know, one's most at risk from. As I say, worrying about Big Brother, it turns out that Big Brother is a half-wit anyway, and that half the time, you know, Big Brother's not as efficient as he thinks he is. On the other hand, the virus writers are very clever, and, you know, their ingenuity is, you know, they go to new heights all the time. So, but even there, you know, you have...
What are these people who do that?
Oh, badness, I think.
Evil.
Oh, I don't know.
It's also creativity, surely.
Well, I think a lot of these virus writers are hoping to subsequently get jobs in the virus guard industries. You know, the best recommendation to you to get a top job as a programmer, to stop viruses is to have written one first. So if you can go to Dr. Solomon's, you know, the program house, the software house that deals with these things, and say, well, I wrote Melissa. Oh, right, well, come in then, we want you. So.
Sometimes
they've
got a message that says virus-free.
Yes, it's only one thing about this is there's a bit of mythology on the web that you can catch a virus by opening an email, by reading an email. This is not true. Although you can potentially get a virus by opening the attachments to emails.